Many people thought the Share Your Embarrassment tour was over, but it was just dormant. We are really excited to announce that right now, tickets are on sale for the streaming Cyboctacular. We filmed our Hollywood show last year, and it's going to be streaming starting May 16th and available for a couple of weeks after that to anyone that holds a ticket. And if you have a Max Fun membership, you can get your ticket at a discount. Just check your inbox for an email for Max Fun with that code. If you aren't and would like to see the show, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets today. These shows are really fun. We put a lot of work into high-quality production values. And if you get a VIP ticket, we can even meet face-to-face over the internet. Get your tickets today at greatestgentour.com, and we'll see you on May 16th.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast from a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Busy day, busy time of year for us.
Yeah.
Recording this like in the lead up to our big Friendly Fire tour.
That's right.
So many things to get done.
Yeah.
We just recorded an episode of Friendly Fire. We got to switch gears.
Why do people call them laundry lists? That doesn't feel like if you're doing laundry, you would require a list for that task, right?
Are they like washing each item of clothing individually?
I don't know. That seems like a inefficient way to do it. Ben, I have gone from, and this is probably going to horrify our viewers because most declarations of our hygiene or I don't know what else qualifies, is enough to like really set our listenership on fire.
Yeah.
But I've been
we
washing
need those people. Don't set them on fire, Adam.
I've been washing all of my clothes in the same load. I'm not separating lights from darks anymore.
What?
I know, that's bad, right? I shouldn't be doing
You're a
that.
Fucking maniac.
Here's the thing. Towels of both the dish and the bathroom variety, those are getting their own load. That's on a warmer water. But everything else is.
I like to put a load in a towel too.
Yeah, yeah, and then I just put all of my clothes in at once on the cold water setting. That's bad, right?
I appreciate that you're going with a cold water setting. It's good for the climate.
It's gonna make the load last longer, I think.
Yeah.
You know, really prolong it.
I find that if you go a long time between loads, the volume also increases.
You're going to need a cold water wash in between those moments also.
Yeah, because it coagulates in hot water, right? Counterintuitive, but cold water is actually a better way to clean up.
Do you have a washer dryer that is all the same barrel? I think I remember that being the case, right?
Yeah, we have we live in a fairly small apartment, and our washer dryer, we feel lucky to have it in unit, but it is the European style of all. It's an all-in-one.
Yeah.
Which is not great, you know. I don't ever feel like the clothes are like they don't seem super duper clean the way they do when you get them out of like a really like nice brand new pair, and also it takes a really long time to do both the washing and the drying, and since they both happen in the same machine, you can't like get a system going where like you're pulling stuff out of the washer and putting it into the dryer.
Yeah, the Henry Ford assembly lineification of your laundry is impossible in those circumstances.
The thing that sucks about it is it feels like we're never not doing laundry. Like we basically can't afford to skip a day, given
there are parents out in our viewership that are like rolling their eyes at us. We have good friends who actually just mentioned that they're never not doing laundry. It is every day.
Yeah, well, kids are. I mean, I think it's strange for like two childless adults to be doing laundry as much.
It's strange for two childless adults to be complaining about anything, really.
Yeah. We should shut up.
Yeah. Enough of this. Do you want to just get into the show? We could just get into the show. I don't have anything to tell you. I haven't been saving anything up.
You know what I've been thinking about a little bit lately?
All right, lay it on me.
I miss playing cards with you, dude.
Oh, yeah. It has been a long time.
It has been such a long time.
You want to squeeze in a quick card game before we start?
Yeah, do you want to play war?
Yeah.
We're at war.
There's been no formal declaration of war.
Maybe this trick will bring us some luck.
That nonsense is centuries behind us.
War! We're going to war!
I grabbed for a couple of packs of the Rules of Acquisition customizable card game.
Oh.
Limited edition expansion pack cards.
I have a mirror pack myself, so
all right.
Looks like we'll be doing one of our kind of asymmetric warfare games.
You never know who's gonna win though in this
never
game.
Never do. It's really more a matter of
like debate, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So 11 cards in a pack. I don't know if we want to do all 11.
You get 11? I've got 9. I'm already losing.
Wow. The Ferengi's shortchanged you?
That's hilarious.
What a shock.
You ready?
Yeah.
3, 2, 1.
I have a character named Devano. Yeah, it looks like a Romulan, but he's got some pretty intense headgear. Typical mid-23rd century Romulan medical staff. Authored several papers studying the effects of cloaking fields and other technology on Romulan physiology. Devano has integrity of 7, cunning of 7, and strength of 5.
I have Cassidy Yates.
What?
Which, I'm just surprised, like, I'm a little confused. I'm looking at the card and it doesn't look like mirror Cassidy Yates. Because it says that she is a freighter captain for Bajoran Ministry of Commerce.
Wow.
Oh, wait, I mean, this has to be, right? Because she smuggled weapons for the Maquis in 2017.
Well, you're not on a mirror pack.
No, yeah, I guess not. So I'm a legit Prime Universe Cassidy Yates.
Wow.
She loves baseball.
I don't think there's any fucking competition here. I feel like I've been obliterated.
I can add 2 card draws to cargo runs, Ben.
Whoa.
That's good. You want to run that cargo.
You want to flip another?
Let's do it.
3, 2, 1.
Ben, I have an event, and that event is the 211th rule of acquisition. Here's how that goes.
Everybody knows how that goes.
If you don't remember. Employees are the rungs on the ladder of success. Don't hesitate to step on them.
Oh, fun. That's just some vintage Ferengi writing right there.
That sounds like the employees of Quark's Bar should unionize.
Adam, I have a piece of equipment, and I'm sure that you'll think you're sitting pretty, but this piece of equipment is a classic disruptor. Standard phase disruption weapon used in the mid-23rd century. Technology shared between the Klingon and Romulan empires during their brief alliance in the late 2260s. So I got a gun.
I think the gun is going to beat an employee every time.
Yeah.
Like, you want to talk about beating up the ladder of success, I think a gun would do the job.
Yeah. Until there are reasonable background checks and some regulations in place to limit the sale of guns, they're going to beat employees every time. Flip another over?
Yeah, let's do it.
I should probably not say that because, like, there will probably be some horrifying mass shooting in between now and when we release the episode.
Yeah, probably. Statistically, you're probably right. 3, 2, 1. My card is Karaman Vessel. It is a freighter.
Mm.
The Karema conduct trade operations for the Dominion. Their vessels can be found throughout... This is the Farmer Hoggett ship, is it not? Was he Karema?
Oh, is it?
Yeah, that was him. That was the episode where an unexploded torpedo crashed through the Defiant's hull, and it was Hanok and Quark that were left to disarm it.
Yeah, he was a shrewd businessman, wasn't he?
Oh, so this is one of the vessels they took into the atmosphere to avoid the Jem'Hadar ticks. So,
no kidding. Does it give you stats on the ship? Like
it does. I've got range of 8, weapons 5, shield 6.
Okay, well, I actually have something fairly comparable to that stats-wise. I have Alliance Nor, which is, it looks like Deep Space Nine, the space station. It's a little picture of Deep Space Nine, ore mining and processing station, representative of facilities used by the Klingon/Cardassian Alliance. The station has weapons of 6 and shields of 30, Adam.
Whoa, I think I like your chances against my Karemin freighter.
Yeah, although the Karemin just has to steer clear of the station and it's no threat.
Yeah.
But I guess if they like went toe-to-toe,
yeah,
station probably comes out fairly unscathed with all them shields.
Right.
Well, that's 2-1. Do you want to make it best of 5?
Yeah, let's go ahead and do that.
All right. The odds are against you, but maybe you can do it. 3-2-1. I have a character named Romera Cal. Typical of personal physicians employed by important alliance officials assigned to the intendant. Surprised at how frequently she comes in for an exam. She's kind of a hunky Bajoran guy. Integrity of 6, cunning of 7, strength of 6.
So I have a Ferengi officer. He's Damon Prak, and he was in that Force of Nature TNG episode in which he, in exchange for repairs to a ship, provided sensor log readings of the missing USS Fleming.
He's a Damon, that's a big deal.
Yeah, so he has integrity of 6, kind of a surprise for any Ferengi. I don't think any Ferengi should have integrity above 3. Cunning of 8 and strength of 7. So kind of a burly dude if you get a strength of 7, I think.
What was his integrity?
6.
Yeah, I think numerically my guy edges you out just a little tiny bit.
Yeah, I think so too. A fairly forgettable TNG episode. This was notable because it was the warp drive speed limit ep.
Oh, boring.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you got me, Ben.
All right. Well, do you want to get into the actual episode we came to talk about today?
I do. There's probably not a lot of Ferengi action in this one, is there? Are there Ferengis in Deep Space Nine Season 4, Episode 12, Crossfire?
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
Odo is kind of rolling out the red carpet for an unassuming Kira.
1 rack de Gino extra hot, 2 measures of Kava.
They have like a weekly meeting where they do the police blotter. She doesn't get the local newspaper to read the police blotter. She actually goes and gets it straight from the horse's mouth.
Mm.
But Odo is revealed to be like really like super anal about how set up his office is in anticipation of her arrival. It's very cute. He wants it to be perfect for her.
I mean, it's a thin line between consideration and creepy, and I think Odo remains on the side of consideration, right?
It's a thin blue line.
I mean, you could read this scene as him doing it expressly to watch her make an O face after drinking her coffee, and that is not great.
Right.
Like, there's like a rack in on Odo's face and a rack in on Kira's face in this moment that make it seem all about that moment and less about making a friend happy and comfortable when taking a meeting with you.
I wish I reveled this much in my sensory environment. Like the implication here is that every morning when she takes her first sip of coffee, she has something that approaches orgasmic pleasure from it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good lesson for us all. We should try harder to enjoy the things that we consume every day. And she really does it.
Every time I get a cup of coffee, I look at it and I say, this coffee will not make me happy. And then I drink it. Coffee will not fix my relationship with my mother.
That's a strange bit of information to meditate on, Ben, but I'm not going to judge. They have a regular review of the criminal activity report. And this is a thing where I have a feeling this could be a thing that is super enjoyable for everyone because it just sort of gives them bits to laugh about.
All I do is
bits.
No matter what.
You'll never believe what happened on the docking ring.
Yeah.
And check out this story from the promenade. Like, it's less administrative and more social.
It taps into the long history of small town police blotters and how funny they are.
Right.
You know?
Right. A bit of information dropped in the scene is that Shakar is coming to visit the station.
I do want to talk a little bit about the crime that's discussed in this
mm-hmm.
episode, because there's I mean, there's that. There's like somebody is protesting Shakar's arrival. He's some kind of political dissident that's putting up graffiti. But they also discuss an alien who like got in a domestic violence incident with his wife. Uh-huh. And I guess the wife hit him, but
yeah.
But they really like breeze past that. Like, what are you gonna do? And I thought that was sad. You know.
I mean, they sort of make that the meat in the relationship sandwich story they're telling, like, because Odo talks about catching them fucking on the promenade,
right?
Not long before this, so it just appears to be a glimpse into a tumultuous relationship.
Maybe that's what they're into. There's a little like light, some rough stuff that they do as part of their sexual routine.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't interrogate the degree to which consent was involved. So yeah. maybe it's all above board.
Who knows? Hope so.
Yeah, you want to believe that.
Yeah. Well, they get interrupted, and this does answer your question, Adam. They get interrupted by everyone's favorite Ferengi, Quark.
Right.
Who comes in, and he's got a noise complaint for his shitty upstairs neighbor, who turns out to be Odin.
And Mr. Bunkin?
And Odo is like a shitty upstairs neighbor on purpose.
Yeah, that's not nice.
This makes me not, like, I think we all have deep misgivings about Quark, being that he has, like, attempted to sell everybody out multiple times and has done some, like, incredibly awful things, but...
None of his many crimes rise to the level of being a bad neighbor, though.
Right, exactly. And that's somewhere that Odo is not afraid to go.
Right. Yeah, that kind of passive-aggressive neighbor behavior is something I've been familiar with over the years as both a recipient and a bad actor.
Yeah.
It's not easy.
I mean, sometimes you can't help it, right? Like, the building is just bad, and
yeah.
Like, there's nothing you can do to... In college, I rented a crappy apartment with some buddies, and I was studying for a test, and I was apparently tapping a pencil on my desk, and it was the sound of my pencil tapping was transmitting through the desk and the floor into the apartment below to the extent that they came up to complain about the tapping.
Wow.
Yeah. So
that's a level of sound deadening that I think the Cardassians would appreciate.
I was I felt bad, but I was also like, at a certain point, like, I need to like be able to study without questioning everything I do with my hands, you know?
A intoxicating combination of bad and incredulous that is combined to make you feel bad credulous.
This is my middle name in college.
Yeah.
Gul Dukat.
Dukat.
Gul Dukat.
So,
you don't think this is going to matter at any point, this Quark complaint, but it does. It matters, and it comes up later in an interesting way.
It sure does, but before we get to that, Shakar shows up.
Shakar went to Supercuts, Ben.
Yeah,
he does not look the same.
He's got certified 90s hair now.
I don't like this look. Why'd they cut his hair?
No, maybe they didn't have a choice. Maybe the actor who played him showed up on set having just come from Supercuts.
You know, that episode where we were introduced to Shakar introduced him as like the rugged farmer type, the ex resistance fighter, real heroic guy.
Yeah.
As a diplomat, he's just uncertain of himself. He's not necessarily good at being a diplomat. And that haircut, like all of it combines to just sort of paint a picture of a guy who's just, I think he's just less interesting now, right from jump.
It's interesting that he kind of seized power back from Kai Winn.
Yeah.
And now doesn't seem to know what to do with it. Doesn't seem to have like an agenda past keeping it out of her hands, which, I mean, I can understand.
Yeah, yeah.
But he does seem a little bit milquetoast.
He's there to give a speech on the promenade, and he's got a couple of handlers, one of which looks just like Scott Glenn. I couldn't get that out of my head.
I'm not following you, Georgie.
Weird timing, because like, he goes up to make a speech, and Odo radios to Sisko saying that there's been a threat of assassination, like, as it's going on, concurrently.
Right.
Not a lot can be done about it now.
And like, and nothing is done about it.
All we can do is go to theme, Ben.
Yeah.
Assassination threat to theme is what we do.
Yeah.
And Odo, after the theme, is pissed that the speech went on after the threat was discovered. But Odo, like, he was mid-speech. Like, are we expecting a end of Star Trek VI, like, jump on the mini-tramp?
Mr. President!
Take Shakar to the floor to protect him from a flying bullet situation?
I mean, we've seen that type of shit go down on this show, I feel like.
Yeah, yeah, agreed. So I don't know what exactly Odo was expecting here. But Odo, for the entire episode, is acting strangely.
Yeah, he starts strange and gets stranger as we go. I mean,
yeah.
The first thing that he does is ream out Shakar and his little helper, his adjutant.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, they realize, like, Shakar's going to be around for a while, and they got to really, like, take the security situation seriously, because there's a lot of cranky people in the Bajoran Cardassian part of space that they're in. There's angry Cardassians, there's angry, humans in the Maquis, there's extremist groups among the Bajorans. So the security situation is going to need a heavy, Adam. It's going to need somebody who's done security before.
Someone whose only kryptonite is a door with a lock on it.
Must be sealed.
Yeah, enter Mr. Worf. That's exciting.
Yeah.
I love that one of the main security plans for Shakar's visit is like a bucket brigade amount of security people in the hallway to his quarters.
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to have to get through all 40 of us to get to his door. And I want to believe that came from Worf, because if you manage to get to the door, it's over.
Yeah.
He doesn't understand him.
Yeah, and he expresses some real stress over adapting his security thinking to a Deep Space Nine context, because a lot of coming and going is a part of life on Deep Space Nine, and Worf is used to a kind of contained system where he can keep an eye on stuff that enters the ship fairly easily.
Providing security was difficult enough aboard the Enterprise.
This conversation between Odo and Worf, I think, is my favorite part of this episode, where they compare notes about what station life is like and how irritating it is.
Yeah,
it's so fun.
They're really, like, bonding over being ultra anal.
Yeah, they're bonding over being bad friends, too, because... Worf is like, God, you know what pisses me off is that great hang and all-around good person, Miles O'Brien, coming over. Like, give me a break. How do I get that guy to leave? And Odo's like, well, you just don't invite him in.
All he wants to do is share beer and be chill.
Yeah, you need to make a guy like that uncomfortable. Like, you're not going to be a Keiko, but you can be Keiko adjacent.
You can put him ill at ease and he'll want to come over less often.
Yeah. Yeah, I love the bonding that Odo and Worf have in this scene. It's probably the only high point to their relationship in it, because the rest of it is pretty contentious.
It's a little bit of a Seinfeld thing, like they don't like the pop-in.
Yeah, yeah.
She likes the pop-in. I've told her how I hate the pop-in. He likes the pop-in, too.
That's probably because he knows you from the Enterprise.
Just popped in now. I'm a big poppin' guy.
Yes?
About Kramer.
Oh, huge poppin' guy.
Precisely.
But if you're writing, like, misanthropes, modeling your characters off of Seinfeld is not a bad idea.
No, not at all. Shakar presents kind of a security issue throughout the ep, because he is down with the idea of needing security, but he still wants to be a free man. And so he likes to do things that are unplanned, like go on walks to places or visit a shrine on the station unannounced. Like, he just wants he wants to be permitted a little bit of freedom. And this is making Odo and Worf's job difficult.
Yeah. My wife works in politics and has spent quite a bit of her career lately, like, doing stuff like making sure a place is not going to be controversial if a politician shows up there.
Mm-hmm.
and like, there's so much thinking about what goes into selecting just, like, something that a prominent politician is going to visit.
Mm-hmm.
And it always like really blows my mind hearing her talk about it, because it's like, if you get to a certain level in politics, you basically can't exercise the kind of freedom that Chikar is exercising. You can't just walk out of your house and down the street and into a store. Like, somebody needs to look into everything about that and make sure it's okay for a million different reasons.
It's the Winston Churchill problem.
Right.
Like, how can you represent people and not be a man of the people? I mean, if you're going to legislate for common cause, you want to know what the commoners want.
Right.
And that seems to be part of his angle. Chikar has an interesting relationship with Odo from Jump, in that, like, much in the same way that, like, I've told you, oh, you're going to love hanging out with this friend when we go out and hang out while you're up here. Like, the referral friendship that Odo represents to him is interesting, because Kira says, Odo's great, you're gonna love him, like, let him protect you, he's one of my best friends. And Chikar's like, you know, you're really weird, Odo, but Kira, like I put a lot of weight in what Kira says, so what's good with her is good with me.
I mean, that's kind of the origin story of our friendship, right?
Totally.
When John Roderick introduced us, we were like, I guess we are best friends now.
Yeah, that carries a lot of weight, that referral. Sure does. Yeah.
So Chikar is like doing a little like meet and greet in front of the Bajoran shrine. There's like a moment where Odo's spidey senses start tingling when a woman like stoops over, but he realizes she's just picking up a baby.
But that baby has a gun.
And that baby shoots and kills Chikar. And because of the way the Bajoran government works, that baby is now the first minister.
You think Chikar walks down the promenade, he looks left, he sees Quarks. He looks right, he sees the shrine, and he's like, God, sure would like to play some Dabo right now.
Look at those babes in there.
I know, that'd be super fun. Yeah. God, work sucks.
What Chikar is on the station to do is make some arrangements for how the Bajorans are going to enter the Federation.
Right. Yeah, there's some negotiating to be done.
And when you have a conference like this, there's a lot of social gatherings attendant to it, and so we get like a party scene. Quark is the catering to this party scene, mm-hmm. But it seems like mostly kind of like Bajoran and Federation dignitaries in attendance.
I feel like Kira got a new costume for this, the dress costume for formal events.
Yeah,
it's weird to see her in blue and not burgundy, you know.
Yeah. And she keeps it on for like, I mean,
yeah.
Everybody else put on their dress uniform for Chikar's arrival, but she's like in this lavender getup for most of the episode, I feel like.
She looks great, and everyone does. I wish there were more occasions to wear the dress uniforms. I think it's cool just giving all the characters a different look.
I thought in this scene she was a little flirty with the adjutant guy.
Oh, you better be good.
I'm terrible.
I thought the same. But... you know, it's weird, right? It's sometimes it's easy to confuse flirty with just being a cool hang and a nice person. And that's shitty, yeah. I think, often for women. Like, and it's unfortunate that was an easy read in that moment.
She's just a friendly barista. She needs a tip, not your phone number.
Right, exactly. And that's...
God damn it. So I'm the asshole, is what you're saying?
No, I don't think so, because I think there is a moment where the Scott Glenn adjutant character is like kind of playing that game too, but I think they're just playing that, God, like these things are so stuffy, at least we can have a little bit of fun. Like, that was neat. I think they were exchanging that currency over flirtatious currency.
Yeah. Well, and he walks off and then she walks up to Odo, and it's kind of a similar vibe. Like, Odo is like taking everything super seriously, and she kind of lets the pressure out of that tire, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you have to stare like that? I think it's making people nervous.
She asks him about his belt.
Mm-hmm.
I really like this special effect of him morphing a belt onto his jacket.
He's like a children's magician sometimes with with the drama he gives to these moments. I half expected him to like put his thumb in his mouth and blow his cheeks out while he made the belt appear.
And they actually fill the room.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
he is charming when he wants to be, and this is like one of the rare moments where Odo is charming in this moment.
Yeah, like he's a little nervous, but he kind of overcomes it to put that charm on.
Yeah. Yeah, braided leather belt is never cool, though, Odo. Those days are long gone.
Yeah, it's not 1994.
But, I mean, this is emblematic of a theme that we'll see for the rest of the episode, which is Kira innocently mentioning something, you know, of note. Like, she notices something about him, and then he wants to make her happy.
Yeah.
And that's a tension that ends up being pretty destructive.
Well, I've always said that the third guy you flirt with at a party is the one you're going to wind up going home with.
Yeah, I mean, if only Kira had popped a cork and hit Odo with it, they could have enjoyed a glass of champagne later on.
But instead, she like is heading out, and Chukar is like, "Hey, where are you going so fast?" And they leave together, Adam.
To be quite honest about it, I was in a pail.
A bucket.
A pail.
Mr. Bucket,
I have to revert back to my living state. I don't use the bucket anymore.
Odo can't have this. For a variety of reasons. It's a security problem, but also, like, he's protective of her, and he sees the beginning of a cozy relationship that is threatening to him.
One of the things I really liked about the way this scene was blocked was that Cork clocks what Odo is doing in this scene. Like he reads it for what it is and not what Odo is trying to present it as.
Yeah.
And you get that whole thing. I almost thought they could have gone in the direction of like Quark also is madly in love with Kira and realizes that Odo is among his competition.
Yeah. I mean, these are some matters that I want to interrogate with you as the episode goes on, because like the way that a lot of this plays out makes me feel like you could make the case that Odo considers himself an incel, and he's and his jealousy of Chukar is such that like it's so destructive to him that he ends up burning himself in the fire that he creates, you know, as a result. Like he just destroys himself over this.
Yeah.
And you could view Odo's actions in that way, and it makes him terrible.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't help. They show him scrolling through some of the more unsavory parts of Reddit in his office later.
I mean, but at the same time, the depiction of someone who has a crush on someone else, and then that person becomes interested in a different person who isn't you, like, that shit happens all the time. And it's hard. And Odo shows us how hard that is. So what I'm trying to say is, like, you could look at this through very dark glasses and it could change your opinion of Odo, or you could view it as a little more innocent than that.
What I saw it as is Odo needs a dad, and specifically he needs Joseph Sisko.
Wow.
This was something that was described explicitly in the last episode, a time when Ben Sisko was real sprung on a girl and was like letting it eat him alive, and his dad came and said, just like, you got to go, you know, you got to do something about it. There's no sitting and marinating in it.
It's a Nephi Beaumont kind of thing.
Nephi Beaumont. What a crush I had on her.
A Joe Sisko callback. I love it. Yeah, that's the advice. You know, you'd think all the time about how alone Odo has to feel and the isolation he's got to feel on the station as being the only one of his kind. But the element I don't often think about is how anything maternal or paternal is a relationship that he doesn't have. No one gives him advice or tells him how to be. He had that guy in the lab a long time ago. And then he has a few of his friendships on the station, and that's it.
Yeah. And he kind of rejected the guy in the lab guy. I mean, for good reason. That guy didn't really have a lot to offer Odo in terms of, like, parental advice, showing him the way.
Yeah. He needs a model. A model of good behavior is what he needs.
Yeah, and not just a model that he can perfectly mimic the shape of.
Right. He's a little like Data in that way.
You really feel for him in the scene where he's, like, going through this and Chukar winds up asking him for advice about what to do about Kira.
Yeah, that was really devastating, right? Wow.
Oh, man.
And it's hard because, like, Odo's never fun. He's never fun to be around or necessarily easy as a hang. And he gets so much time just... That's the one thing you can say about Shakar. Shakar's pretty milquetoasty in this episode, but Shakar also has like just an easy vibe about him. He's not really he's worked up about shit. And that is, chill is not what Odo is, ever. No.
He has no chill.
Yeah.
Shakar is in the scene, like, confesses that he has some feelings for Kira and isn't sure where to place them.
Yeah.
How to move on it.
I'm afraid to say anything because it might ruin our friendship.
Odo suggests, oh, maybe she's still, like, bent out of shape over Vedic Barile and needs more time. There's a puzzle that Shakar is very innocently trying to solve. He doesn't realize how much pain he's inflicting on Odo in using Odo as the sounding board.
Right.
Because in Shakar's defense, Odo has never made his feelings clear to anyone.
Right.
The only time he ever made his feelings clear was in that cave, and it wasn't really Kira. It was Change Leader.
Right. Shakar articulates his feelings for Kira that could be Odo's feelings exactly. Like all of his concerns about blowing up a friendship, possibly being the risk of sharing his true feelings with her, like they might as well be thoughts ripped out of Odo's mind.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it so painful, is like Odo's sitting there like, God, like, how do you know? How do you know all this?
Yeah.
It should bring them closer, but it just can't. It can't because it makes them competition.
There are movies and TV plots where two guys that both love the same girl like get in league with each other in some way, like mm-hmm. to knock out the other guy that she's with mm-hmm. or something. And this never kind of indulges in that storyline. Like
right.
all of this is much more realistically isolating for Odo. It makes him feel like there's nobody he can go to. Which is why it's like it's such a fun twist of irony that Quark is the one to confront him about this.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. That was a great choice by this script to make him that mouthpiece.
You are in a bad mood today.
They're like prepping for the big conference in the wardroom, and Odo's like finding Ferengi listening devices that Quark has stuck in the bowl of fruit. But Quark is also, you know, unearthing Odo's dirty business.
That fruit looked overripe to me, Ben. Get those brown streak bananas out of there.
They're brown streak, but they're also green.
Yeah, weird.
Are they those like apple bananas, the like little miniature ones? Because they also didn't seem like very long.
I don't know what it is, but it didn't seem very appetizing to me. Maybe that's probably why Quark hid the listening device there. He knew no one was going to go for a piece of fruit.
It's just a still life. still life with listening device.
Yeah.
that famous painting.
Yeah, one of the best. They rope that one off, though. You can't get too close.
Yeah.
Quark in this scene calls him out on his bad mood and knows exactly the reason why. And Odo, being confronted with the truth, reacts poorly.
Yeah. This is not necessarily a great look for him.
This is emblematic of everything about Odo. Like, I think Quark in this scene could provide some comfort. Like, if he's outed by Quark for his unrequited love for Kira, there's a moment in there where Odo could be like, I don't know what to do, man. Like, you're a bartender. Tell me anything about what relationships are like. Quark is a wealth of knowledge in this area, and Odo instead chooses to be embarrassed.
Yeah, and he can't be vulnerable with anyone, and least of all Quark.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I understand their professional relationship makes that impossible, but I think Quark has so much advice to give if Odo would only be curious.
Yeah.
And it's not like Odo is making fun of him over it either. He's just astonished that he figured out the truth. Like he's not throwing it in Odo's face, I don't think.
No. No.
I think that's that's crucial, I think.
What are you doing now?
Ow! Ow! Ow!
Be guard. Exactly.
a lot of this episode is about Odo going on these very devastating walks where he is being the bodyguard, essentially, to Kira and Chikara as they fall further in love with each other.
Yeah. Yeah, you can really tell the intimacy of a relationship from behind, right? Like, that's the angle where you can tell someone's posture and how close they're leaning into someone and, like, the lingering touches. Like, right. Like it's right there in front of him.
It is during one of these walks that that an attempt is actually made on Chikara's life. They're on an elevator, and Odo is so distracted by how lovey-dovey they're starting to become with each other that he fails to do some element of his security procedure.
Wharf to Odo. A turbo lift is stuck on level 41. We are going to have to reroute you.
Verify your security code and I'll release the controls to you.
Commander Wharf is apparently just like running security from like a booth with a bunch of TVs somewhere, but we never see him. He's just radio guy for most of this episode.
Yeah.
The Eagle is on the move, Mr. Wharf.
The terror cell is actually fairly sophisticated because they're able to use Worf's voice in this scene to get some intel from Odo, which creates the issue that plays out here. Like Odo and Worf have a plan for figuring out if they're actually talking to each other, and it involves a code, and Odo does not wait for that code to happen.
Yeah, he just goes for it, and then he has to turn his hand into some kind of metal press to stop the elevator from falling.
I tell you what, Kira's got to wonder what Odo could do to the inside of her turbo lift shaft after this scene, right? Wow. How could, I mean, as cool as Chikara is in this moment, like, you got to look over there at those at those fucking hammers and be like, damn. Later on, Odo debriefs Sisko about the incident, and Sisko sees right through this. He's like, Odo, what the fuck is wrong with you, man? Like, this isn't something that you usually fuck up. Like,
you're not usually distracted by love, guy.
Yeah. And Odo actually cops to, like, hey, man, I'm just going through some stuff right now. I'm listening to a lot of sad music. You know how it is.
I've been up late at night on r/red pill.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm really going down a spiral. It's not good for me.
Yeah. Sisko's pissed, and he should be. Keep your eye on the ball, Odo.
I mean, they have like a good enough relationship that Odo can say like, hey, it's personal and I don't want to talk about it, and also it's not going to happen again.
Yeah.
And that is satisfactory for Sisko.
Sisko's like, well, I guess my plan B is Worf, so I guess I'm going to take a compromised Odo over that. I like how that math pencils out in my mind.
Yeah. Worf got what he wants, which is that the station has been locked down. So, they know that there's a perp on the loose somewhere on the station, and now they're not letting ships come or go so that they can nail this person.
Right. There are a lot of Odo's behaviors that could be seen through a creepy lens. Maybe the most creepy part is when Odo stations himself outside of Kira's quarters all night while Shakar's inside.
And what's going on here seems pretty pervy.
Because he relieves the doorman and takes the rest of his shift. And man, I think it's gross to think that he just wants to be close to it during.
Yeah. If you have a glass, leave it behind. I want to listen through the door.
Yeah.
I kind of wanted them to come out at the end of this shift and have Odo be a little bit flaky, the way he gets when he hasn't had his sleepy time.
Wow, that would have been great.
Like, just a tiny, tiny bit, you know? Just
that's a
hint
good punch
of
up, yeah.
Odo is, yeah.
Like, I think we've used the word pain a couple of times in this episode, having to do with Odo's feelings. And I think probably no part is more painful than him than being invited into Kira's after Chikara leaves.
Yeah, and she's still like in the bathrobe and there's still the bucket with the champagne and the two half-drunk glasses sitting out.
Yeah, it's like everything he's ever wanted to have with her in the aftermath.
I thought it was really great mise-en-scene that the pot of flowers on her coffee table is a bunch of flowers that look like limp penises.
Yeah, and much like Shakar telling Odo of his feelings about Kira and that like being the slap to one cheek, Kira's confidence in him about her feelings in Shakar are the slap to the other.
Yeah. And you talked a bunch about body language earlier, and the way she physically interacts with him in a private space like this is so intimate, you know? Yeah. She's like hugging him from behind when she says like, oh, you wanted to ask me something, like what was that about? Like she is, like her nose is an inch from his nose. She is in kissing range, man. Like all of those signals are, you know, like, and it is like sibling-like affection that she feels for him. But, you know, that takes on like a, and I feel like she's acted like that around him plenty of times on the show.
She's
but like
not
it
changing
feels,
her behavior, yeah.
It feels really different in this episode.
Yeah. Yeah. Because there's this underpinning of conflict that plays throughout. And again, like, I want to be clear, Kira's not doing anything wrong.
No. In fact, I really loved this scene because of how palpable her joy in it is.
Yeah.
Like her joy is like if you're watching it for I want Kira to be happy, it is infectious. And if you're watching it for I want Odo to be happy, it's a fucking knife.
It is real salty sweet all at the same time, and it's really well done.
Yeah.
What a predicament.
Morn. Dude, sweet. Morn.
Evening, everybody.
Morn.
Stop. Hammer time.
Odo gets back to his office where Worf has finished the security.
What'd he do?
He was responsible for the attack on First Minister Shakar.
What?
They're locking him up. Odo's just like, all right, I'll take your word for it.
One of my low-key favorite parts of this episode is the compliment that Worf pays Odo at the end of this. Odo is feeling super bad about not being present for any of it, and he feels guilty about his ill participation. And Worf's like, no, dude, like, your deputies are awesome, and you are a great constable here, like, because they are well-trained and good. Like, they made my job easy. And that's like, what you want to hear if you're a boss, right?
Yeah. You got your team is whipped into shape.
But it doesn't make him feel any better because he is still reeling from the morning with Kira. And so he decides to take it out on his quarters.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the things he takes it out on, Ben, it was a gift from Kira. Like,
yeah, the
flowers
the plant in the bucket.
Yeah. His old bucket and the plant that Kira gave him go over the side, along with a bunch of other shit that he breaks.
The Apple Store is not going to fix that computer for free.
Yeah, no.
It was obviously user-caused damage.
Yeah. Did something gold hit the screen? Because I don't think that's covered under warranty. I don't know how that happened.
I just opened it up one day and the screen was like that.
Yeah. Quark obviously hears the ruckus and is actually able to punch into the room, like using the... using the code, which is great.
Kind of undercutting everything Worf said in the last scene about whether or not Odo is good at security.
Yeah.
Quark can bypass the security chief's door.
Yeah.
The indignity for Odo of being called out on the carpet by Quark is, I mean, it really adds insult to injury. The fact that it is Quark here going like, I can't believe you're so in love. What a tragedy for you.
It takes passion to do something like this. And I always thought you were colder than a Breen winter.
Their relationship is so interesting. And this is a scene that, like, adds to that legend. Like, Quark so often hides good advice in being a shitty Ferengi.
Right.
And, like, that's sort of what's happening here. He's like, look, man, I'm losing a ton of money because of you because I always bet on the favorite. And you're the favorite in the station when it comes to busting crime, and clearly you're off your game. Like, pour yourself into your work. It'll make you feel better. And Odo
make
is...
make me rich.
Odo is just fucking destroyed. I read an interesting thing about this scene, Ben, which was, like, having to do with Odo's must hair.
Hmm. Yeah, I thought that was an interesting detail.
This was the actor's choice. René Auberjonois chose to pull some hair down because he saw a picture of a Japanese print of a warrior in defeat. And I feel like I've seen this print before. And the warriors, like a Japanese warrior will often have their hair tied back.
Right.
And after battle, this warrior was defeated and his hair was down in his face. And that was the inspiration for this look for Odo. Thought that was pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah. That's fantastic bit of research. Yeah. Can't believe you did that.
I know. I can't believe it either. It was just too interesting of a choice. Like, it couldn't have been unmotivated, you know? Like, that's what sent me down that path.
Yeah. The conclusion that he draws in this scene is pretty devastating. He goes to Kira's office and to make matters worst of all, perhaps she has put on the pizza oven killing top, and it is with her dressed like that he has to tell her that he doesn't want to. He wants to kind of limit their contact.
You know, I think there was a thought when he walked in about turning himself into a pizza oven for the conversation. And then he saw what she was wearing and he's like, oh, that was close.
Never mind.
I'm afraid I won't be able to make our Tuesday morning meetings anymore.
It's a very hard thing for him and she doesn't really understand why. And I thought it was very interesting that she doesn't press him. She can sense that he's in a lot of pain and discomfort and doesn't know what it's about.
Hold on a second. Do you think that she doesn't know what it's about, or do you think she knows what it's about?
I don't think she knows.
I'm not as confident as you are about that. Another question I wanted to ask you was, do you think Odo came there at first to tell her that he loved her and then got cold feet and instead pivoted into making less time? Because there's such a pregnancy to the moment the door opens to him finally speaking feels so heavy, like he's actually working the math out of how he's going to do it. And I wonder if there's just more going on in his head than what we end up getting.
I don't know. I've never been a person who is like brave enough to express those things in most circumstances, so the taking the easy way out of limiting contact and retreating felt like the natural conclusion to me.
Yeah. Yeah, it did. It was no matter how you read it, I think it's a satisfying and heartbreaking thing because no one's happy at the end of this scene. No. Odo is sad for having to do this. Kira is sad for a change in their friendship. Yeah. And a more limited contact with someone that she really likes hanging out with. I think it's really well done.
Yeah.
You really want to do this? Here, now, okay, let's do it!
The button on the episode is is Odo in Quark's bar. We get a little wrap-up on the Odo as bad upstairs neighbor story, which is that he has chosen to have some soundproofing installed in his floor.
This is another moment which, in totality, like, if you didn't watch the episode and you just bullet-pointed the things that Odo did, soundproofing his room at the end of it is kind of a dark prediction of something to come. It's like buying a windowless van out of nowhere. Like, probably does not bode well.
Yeah, the next episode, he's, like, humping a couch in the hallway, and Kira comes along, he's like, do you mind helping me get this inside my apartment? I hurt my hand. Yeah, if you could just back it in. I don't even need to tuck my penis in between my legs.
He can just suck it in. The button on the episode is like, you know, we sometimes get a composition like this to depict a lonely person, a person alone in a room full of people. And that is what we get on Odo's walk near Quark's, right? Like,
yeah.
Like he is maybe as alone as he's ever been. and surrounded by the people that he is there to protect and occasionally befriend. It's kind of like not a happy ending, certainly.
Certainly not. He's kind of repelled from the room by Kira and Shakar being in there goofing around and having a great time with each other.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, DS9's a small town. Not many places to hide from this stuff.
Yeah, but importantly, I think that it is now more populous than the Entrepreneur was.
Yeah, they mentioned a number, right? Like in the in the 1500 range or something?
I think 1200 is what I remember.
Wow.
But yeah, like that's and that was like one section that they were talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
So a lot of people live there now. Did you like the episode, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, I really did. I was shocked at, you know, the show has been broad for many episodes now in story and tone. And this was so gentle and nuanced. I really didn't know if the show was capable of this.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, infatuation is an easy story to tell. You see it all the time. And it's much easier of a story to tell than a story about a person who is frustrated because this person doesn't allow themselves to try something that they want to try. Like, that's extremely difficult as a story compared to infatuation. There's a million rom-com movies that are about infatuation.
Right.
There are, in relation, very few stories that are more quietly told in the way this one is, and stories that tell that end like this one does, with the regret of an action not taken, and the glimpse of a future that doesn't really give a person much hope. And that's what makes this episode tough, because like there's not a lot of hope for Odo right now, and as hard as that is to experience, it made it a very good episode.
I think that the fact that they depict it, as you say, as infatuation, but also it doesn't become a core element of his identity or something that he blames her for,
right,
is also really strong. Like, there's plenty of times where
it degrosses it too,
yeah,
right? Very specifically.
If that turned into kind of like an outward anger, it would be real nasty. And instead, it's about him kind of coming up against a personal limitation. And, you know, for a character with as many like magical capabilities as he has, that's a big challenge, I'm sure.
He never weaponizes her kindness against her in a, but what about when you did this and you come over all the time and you gave me that hug from behind? Like, what was that supposed to mean? Like, he never does that. And I think that is so fucking crucial to us not thinking Odo's a piece of shit. He's a guy with a crush.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A guy with a crush that didn't act on it, but also doesn't blame that on the girl he had the crush on.
Not acting on a crush is Odo's resting state. If the crush is experiencing a life that contains a multitude of interesting experiences, like, that's what he's doing. He's making this choice at every turn with a lot of circumstances.
Yeah.
And like, that's the greatest form of like human tragedy, is like you look back on your life and it's full of regrets for not doing shit. Like, that he's adding up a lot of years here.
Yeah.
And the math isn't kind.
I want to live a life of no regrets.
Right?
That's why I want to go check out our P1s.
No regrets.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, we got a couple of priority one messages here. The first is of a promotional nature.
All right.
Goes like this. Do you think Ode to Spot is a pretty good poem?
Nope.
Is Porthos your favorite character in Enterprise?
Yes.
Have you not deleted your Facebook yet?
No.
Come join the Pets of DeSoto. We're a Facebook group filled with pet pictures, weird video replies, and some stupid memes.
Wow.
So pilot your runabout over to Pets of DeSoto. While you're at it, Join us in supporting wildfire relief by donating to the Butte City Humane Society at buttehumane.org. That's buttehumane.org. And now enjoy Ben and Adam singing the sax solo from Baker Street. Join the Pets of DeSoto on Facebook. Donate to buttehumane.org.
Wow. I love this. I love Friends of DeSoto getting together for great causes. And yeah. Also sharing pet pictures, but wow, way to bring the team together. Do some good work.
I do really like a cute pet picture.
Yeah.
But this looks like Chico, California is where the Butte Humane Society is, and that is definitely a part of the country that is dealing with fires all the time, and that hits animals as well. So
right.
Really great cause, and I'm glad some FODs are banding together to support something like that.
Yeah, me too. One more time, where can you find those guys?
It's buttehumane.org. buttehumane.org.
Wow, good work. Good work over there. Our second priority one message is of a personal nature. It is from She Who Does Burlesque. And it is for Jude. The message goes like this: even though you've kind of ghosted me as of writing this P1, I can't be mad since you introduced me to Greatest Gen.
Wow.
And then in parentheses, also, it's your prerogative. Continues.
Yeah, fair.
I thought it might make you smile to hear a P1 for you, so here it is. You're cool and sexy, and I hope everything with you is awesome. Text me if you want some cookies. Hey, that's nice.
That is nice.
You know, sometimes things work out, sometimes they don't. She Who Does Burlesque has a pretty live and let live perspective on this.
And if Jude doesn't want any further contact with She Who Does Burlesque, plausible deniability, right? Oh, I must have missed that episode.
I guess so. Yeah. Yeah.
I like it.
Adult relationships happening among our friends of DeSoto.
And unlike Odo, making their being vulnerable with your feelings.
Yeah. Good job.
Out there.
Good job, She Who Does Burlesque.
Well, if you'd like to send a priority one message, you know what to do. It's MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where a personal message can be had for $100 and a commercial for $200, and they help us cover the cost of making this show.
Gotta get that gold press latch. Get that
gold press latch.
Am I right?
Microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. Now, if you're like me, you were born in the 80s, and THC was vilified by teachers and police officers and members of the clergy and politicians, and it really got ratcheted up to a fever pitch. So I think it is fair to have a little bit of trepidation around this kind of thing. But I think for a lot of people, a microdose of a cannabis product is actually a great thing. And if you are interested in seeing why it is so ridiculous that the world went so reefer mad for so long, I encourage you to give microdose gummies a try. So get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Promo code SCARVS. It's available nationwide. That's microdose.com. The promo code is SCARVS for 30% off and free shipping. Microdose.com, promo code SCARVS.
What are the rituals you have in your life? For me, it's a coffee and a dog walk in the morning, a yoga or a Peloton ride after that, a scoop of fiber at night before bed, and at some point in the middle of the day, I take my ritual vitamins, a couple of Essential for Men, and a Symbiotic Plus for gut health. If I can do all those things, I'll feel like I'm doing a good job taking care of my birdie. Ritual is a science-backed multivitamin with 10 key ingredients. They are rigorously tested and validated by a third party for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. Essential for Men is what I take,
and it's a quality multivitamin from a company you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/scarves. Start Ritual or add Essential for Men to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/scarves for 25% off.
Hi, this is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back.
What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast. Gotta get that gold press lack. Get that gold press lack. No, lack, no, lack, no,
lack, no, lack, no. Gold press lack. That's a lot of yamak sauce. Hey, Adam.
What's up, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
More like drunk Shimodo.
Jesus.
Yeah, it's Odo for me. I mean, and it's not like, I don't want to cut the guy down because he's hurting, but you gotta say what you want to say, man. Like,
yeah.
You gotta take that Joe Sisko advice.
You gotta do that.
You know, it sounds like Joe Sisko wants some people to talk to. He needs it, clearly, because he won't leave his restaurant customers alone. Ben Sisko should have put him in touch with Pops. Get a nice FaceTime relationship going between the two where Joe could share some advice.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah, so that's my Shimoda. What about you, Ben?
My Shimoda is Quark for that terrible bug placement. I liked the idea of a bug in a bowl of fruit.
Yeah.
But it was like on top of a banana that was under the first layer of fruit. Like Odo picked up one thing and the bug was right there. That's not smart, Quark.
Quark is Ferengi smart in a lot of ways, but he is not spy smart.
No, in any way. Not.
I mean, I guess he broke into Odo's quarters. That's being spy smart.
Yeah.
So I don't know. He's kind of a moving target in terms of his intelligence, right?
I think that's the best way to think about it.
Well, what do we have coming up on the next episode, Ben?
Oh, well, on the next episode, season 4, episode 13, Return to Grace, a demoted Dukat enlists Kira's aid in regaining his former status in the Cardassian Empire.
Hmm.
I wonder if this is fallout for going home with his daughter who was in a mining camp or whatever.
The interview for Dukat's happening and they're like, well, do you have any references or anything? And Dukat's like, well, you're not going to believe this. Yeah, interesting. All right. I like Gul Dukat as an interesting character, so let's bring him back. That sounds fun. Are we going to be watching this episode in a particular way?
Well, let's head over to gach.biz/game where the Game of Buttholes, The Will of the Prophets, can be found. This is our Wheel of Fate for this show. Currently, our runabout is on square 9. It's right on the doorstep of a Coco No-No episode. We could also hit a Fuck It, We'll Do It Live episode, which would be very complicated.
Yeah,
to
that
accomplish.
Would be kind of a nightmare, to be honest. Yeah.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
But here we go. I'm going to roll the dice.
Did I win?
Hardly.
Oh, thank goodness, Adam. We skipped over. Fuck it, we'll do it live. We're on square 13.
And that is a regular old episode, yeah?
It sure is. So next time we will be regularing.
I love it. It's so hard.
We've always aspired
to
be regular.
Yeah. Aspirational regularity is, it's a lifetime journey, Ben, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
I got to know if I'll ever get to that destination, but it's worth trying.
For sure. We got to thank all the friends of DeSoto who go to MaximumFun.org/donate and contribute on a monthly basis to make this show possible. Couldn't do it without you.
God, we have so many people to thank that just help with the enjoyment of our show. I think the people that I think about most often in this capacity are the ones who like make sidecar artwork for us, like the J.J. Lendels of the world who makes the movie posters and the Bill Tillies who makes the playing cards. Like every week, something new and fun to see.
Yeah.
Pretty great.
We got to thank Adam Ragusa, who makes all the custom theme music for the show. You can check out his amazing cooking YouTube channel.
Yeah, definitely do.
Just search Adam Ragusa on YouTube.
Make yourself a great steak or a chicken parm or any number of things. I think he's got like a dozen recipes up now.
Yeah. Some good pizza.
Yeah. I haven't made that pizza yet, but I want to.
Make that pizza.
Yeah.
And we should thank Dark Materia, who made the original theme music for our program.
Hey, you know what?
What?
If you haven't left a 5-star review of the show, I think you need to go over there right now and do it. Just get it done.
Go get it done.
Just make it happen.
2 minutes max.
5 stars and then a thing you like about Ben and a thing you like about me. That's all you need to do. That's not so hard, is it?
It is not hard.
I could think of literally a dozen great things about Ben and zero things about me. You, the reviewer of the show, are not either of us, so you'll probably have an easier time coming up with stuff for both.
Check out the other shows on the Maximum Fun Network, including our shows The Greatest Discovery and Friendly Fire. And check out Friendly Fire live on tour. You can get tickets for that at friendlyfire.fm/live.
You're going to love seeing Friendly Fire live. And if you haven't listened to the show by now, get into it. It is a ton of fun. People love it.
Indeed.
With that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, which is just kind of always looking for the outline of Gul Dukat's dick now. It's kind of a thing, Ben.
Yeah, it's a thing.
He's just always hanging dong.
Guy loves showing that dick off.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.